everybody, and welcome back to Pagan Switchy Corner. My name is Pagan, and today I am joined by a brand new guest who I'm so excited to talk to because the book that I read was incredible, and that is Jamie Wagner, who is the author of Hades, Myth, Magic, and Modern Devotion. Please tell me I got your last name correct, because I butcher everybody's last name.
Yes, no, it's absolutely fine.
Okay.
Yeah, you did great.
But the book was absolutely fantastic. It's funny because I get a lot of books with Llewellyn and all that. And so they usually will be like, hey, do you want to have this author come on and, you know, all that? Would you like a copy of the book? And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I found this book before they could even offer it to me because
It
popped up on my Amazon feed. And I'm like, ooh, what is this? Okay, you have my attention. Yeah. And then I saw the foreword by Morpheus Ravana, and yes. I was like, okay, yeah, you have, take my money. Just take my money right now.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, Hades is actually like the only book of its kind. And that's one of the reasons that I wanted to write it, is because when I first started studying Hades and started to develop a devotional relationship with him, there weren't any resources. There was really nothing to go on. And so it took a lot of time and research. And I really wanted to put something out there for others who might be seeking the same type of information as I was.
And the funny thing was, I hadn't really started any work with Hades before I had found the book. And I was just kind of, and it was odd because I was telling my coven about it. I was like, I've got this really weird nudge from Hades, and I don't work with Hades. Like, I don't really work with anybody in the Greek pantheon. So that's why I was like,
yeah,
why is Hades reaching out? And then the book pops up on Amazon. And I'm like, okay, I see what you're doing here, sir. All right. Okay. We'll sit down and have a conversation. All right.
Yeah.
And then I read the book and I'm like, yeah. Okay. Everything you put in there about the lore and how he reaches out and how his presence is and how like overpowering his presence can be. And I was like,
Yep.
100%. That was Hades. Yeah. Okay. I guess we're having a conversation.
He's subtle, but at the same time, very magnetic and very persistent.
Yes.
So it's something, it's, you know, when he's sort of calling or maybe nudging you a little bit, it might feel kind of vague at first. That's pretty common. I think over millennia, he's probably developed some discernment in how, just how intense his presence can be. So he doesn't try to overwhelm people at first.
Yes, that is very accurate to kind of how he came through originally, because it was kind of just like this little gentle nudge. And I'm like, I don't understand what's going on here. We don't work together. Why are you nudging me? And then when I finally did reach out and go into trance and have that nice conversation with him, I was like, whoa, wow, you've got some energy, man. Wow. I don't know. Ooh, can you turn that down like by five? Just a little? And he was just like, okay, I'll back off a little bit. And even then, it was still a little overpowering. And he's like, hold on, I can fix this. And at that point, it was right at the cusp between spring and winter. And so he brought Persephone in, and Persephone was still part of that. And she helped tone some of his energy down, so it was easier to communicate with him. And I'm like, okay, I see why y'all come as a match set now. I get it.
That's wonderful. I'm glad that you got to speak with him.
He's such an interesting deity to communicate with. And I love how you took like the conversations with him and retelling of his myths and put them into the book and kind of modernized them a little bit. Obviously, you still kept a lot of the traditional lore with him, but there was such great interactions with that modernization that really made him present in today's world, which I do think that he kind of is a little misrepresented in today's world, because they're like, Hades, you know, big scary god of the dead.
Well, what you're talking about is the beginning of each chapter. It starts out with a narrative piece that is in Hades' own voice. So it's a first person narrative. And that comes out of my personal practice. I mean, you mentioned that you do trance journey as well, and that is a cornerstone of my magical practice and has been the entire time that I've been a practitioner. And I think it's really important that we go to any sort of unseen beings that we don't normally get the chance to interact with in the waking world, that we go to them and ask them for their stories in their own words. Because the primary source fragments that we have that come down over the years, of course, were captured by humans, right? With the typical human biases and, you know, hidden or overt agendas, we never know. So it can be important to ask them what they want us to know about them, and also what's relevant for us to know about them today. And I think that that's really interesting. And I can say with surety that Hades is still very much invested in humans in the modern world. So.
Very much invested. And that is very true, even from my own experience with him. And even though it's limited, because we're still in that, you know, kind of getting to know you phase. But even then, yeah, he has such a vested interest in humans and humanity as a whole. And he really does want to know, like, tell me about your life. Like, how are things going? You know, what's going on with you? And it's like, huh, all right. I like this. This is interesting. A little different from my other deities, but not in a bad way. I'm kind of cool with this. He's very overpowering.
That facet of his personality, like his curiosity about life, is they're oftentimes very surprising to people. Like, they don't really realize, but then they're like, oh, well, you know what? That totally makes sense. I mean, you know, just because he is the ruler of the realm of the dead doesn't mean that he doesn't find our lives and our struggles interesting and curious, you know?
Absolutely.
It's kind of like, you know, if he only cared about the dead, which of course he cares greatly about the dead. That's, you know, that's his purpose. But it's kind of like saying you only care about your job, right? Like, I only care about my job. I don't really care about the lives of my family or my friends or the other things that make up the fullness of my life, right? So, it really makes sense that he's curious about those things and wants to have and is interested in being invested in them. So.
And I think it's such a great thing too, kind of how, and I'd like to, if you can a little bit, I'd like for us to elaborate a little bit about the realm of Hades itself, the underworld, and how modern, well, I don't want to say modern, how over the years it has been depicted as this place of torment, as this place where you're just, your soul is just kind of stuck until whatever, and like there's not really a whole lot about it. It's just like, oh, it's the realm of the dead, end of story. But as you were explaining it in your book, there's so much more complexity to it that has been missed over the years. So let's talk a little bit about that. If you want to elaborate a little bit, of course, not giving too much away in the book, I'm going to recommend everybody go buy the book and read it because it's awesome and you need to. And there's going to be a link in the show description. There's a shameless plug. But I would love to talk a little bit about how that's kind of been misconstrued over the years.
Yeah, so I could have written probably another volume or three about just the underworld itself, right? It's a really vast place. And, if readers are not familiar, so Hades is often referred to as the name of the god and also sometimes the name of his realm. In the book, just for purposes of clarity, I call the god Hades and I call the realm the underworld. And the underworld is basically, it's got several different features. There are rivers there. There are magical pools. There is, of course, the halls of Hades, where Hades and Persephone live when she is there. There are the fields of Elysium. There are the Asphodel fields, the Isles of the Blessed. And, of course, you have Tartarus. So there are all these kind of different areas that that make up this place. There's lots of different landscapes. I mean, Hades has a garden. He has a cattle herd. He has someone that tends his orchards. there's a lot of beings that live down there that sort of live and have different roles that they play in the cycle of death and rebirth. So there's a lot more to it than people expect. And I think that the other thing that people don't really realize about Hades and his realm is that Hades actually, his purview extends to everything beneath the surface of the earth. So all of the fertile soil, all of the layers of rock, all the rivers that run underground, all of the metals and precious resource deposits and crystals and minerals, all of that is part of Hades and his underworld.
That is so cool. And it's funny because I just recently had a conversation with Enwin Avalon, who does a lot of water magic. And the interesting thing about the underground rivers and all that, she and I had a very similar conversation just recently about the underground rivers and how the dead and energies and all that move through them. And as I was reading the book, I was just like, wow, okay, well, that's synchronistic that all of that ties into each other.
For sure. And I mean, the realm of Hades, it's kind of like anything else in mythology or in a religion or a spiritual tradition. You have you have beliefs that kind of change and shift over generations and over hundreds, if not thousands of years. And so sometimes, you would have like newer poets or newer philosophers come in and speak about the realm of the underworld in different ways and kind of put their own spin on it. But it stayed largely the same up until sort of the, just after the turn of the millennium when Christianity was on the rise. So, in most of the ancient world, there was a general understanding of the major facets of the underworld.
Yeah, I would definitely have to agree with that. And I love that you highlight all of that too and so well in the book. I mean, I will sit here and gush for 2 hours straight about how great your book is, and I can,
Thanks.
because honestly, you brought such a new life to a deity that, I mean, as you were saying before, he didn't really have that kind of, there was no other works out there about him like this. And I also loved how you also brought life to lesser known deities that work within the underworld that I was even unfamiliar with. Like, I didn't know that Hades had daughters. I had no idea. And I was like, oh, okay, well, now I need to know them. Thank you.
There are competing sources, of course. This happens with primary sources. And some sources will say, as ruler of the realm of the dead, Hades therefore cannot have children because, the dead do not have children. But then we have other sources that say, no, Hades does have daughters. Hades and Persephone have children. And they have their own tasks that they take care of. He has Mylinoe, who is often described as being half dark and half light, or half black and half white, because she is of two realms. And she is the goddess of ghosts and the dead who are not given proper burials and who are not able to cross over to the other world. So she, she's often kind of a fearsome figure. But she kind of takes care of those souls that are a bit left behind. And then there's Makaria, who is in charge of the fields of Elysium and also the Isles of the Blessed. And also in Makaria's orchard, she makes honey, which is used to create like fabulous drinks for the gods and things like that. So very interesting, his daughters.
Very interesting indeed. And excuse me. I love the fact that, when, you're studying a lot of times when you work with the dead and you study, how psychopomp stuff works and all that. There's a lot of overlapping stuff with honey. And it spans throughout all the different pantheons, like so many different ones, from Egyptian to Norse to the Celtic pantheons, all the way into obviously Greek and Roman. And to see that, yes, the honey is tied into the dead, and you'd be like, well, why is the honey being made in the halls of the dead? Well, why not?
I mean, why not, right?
Why is there an orchard in the halls of the dead? I mean, we don't know the reason. He likes plants, okay? Let him have his
I
plants.
mean, because the underworld, it is a place, right? Like it's not merely just like like a container where a bunch of like dead mortals are wafting around, right? It's a place with its own landscape and its own sort of industries and things that are happening and folks that have particular jobs they're doing. And it's really rich and dynamic, and you wouldn't really know until you study some of the primary sources and then go there in trance journey and kind of are able to see or sense it for yourself. So it's really interesting. And one of the things I love about the underworld is it's kind of like sometimes I joke it's like that old sort of like what is it? Stop animation cartoon that used to come on at Christmas, the Rudolph cartoon, and you
Oh
have the
yeah.
Island of Misfit Toys. And they're on this little island, but they have their this great little community of misunderstood toys. I kind of feel like the underworld is like that sometimes.
I could see that. Yeah, I could see that. How, they're like, you have the obviously, deities that are not quite deities and they're not quite monsters and they're not quite human. And then you have, the ones that you would basically class as daemons. And then you have, obviously Hecate, who's a Titaness. And so you have all of these different beings that reside in this realm outside of just Hades. Hades just he's the boss man, but he has all these other beings that still live there and call this place home and also have jobs and all that within that. And I think it's just so fascinating how over the years you really kind of as you study Greek mythology, of course, because we've all had to study it in school. It's like, yeah, there's the underworld, and then that's just the end of the story. And then you start reading about it and you're like, oh, well, this place is really rich and diverse and interesting.
It
Okay,
is. It
I
is.
like it.
And when you study it in school, you mostly, I mean, you might study a little bit about the different generations of gods in Greek mythology. I mean, you have the Titans who are overthrown by the Olympian generation, and Hades is part of the Olympian generation, although he is not considered an Olympus himself, although he is a son of Cronos and his brothers and sisters are Olympians, but he's not considered one himself because he doesn't live on Mount Olympus. So that's another like thing about him that people may not realize.
Yeah, I would definitely say that's very true because he's kind of like the forgotten child in a lot of ways because he's like, well, I guess I gotta go to the underworld now. And I don't like the story of how he's represented in the Disney Hercules, but I also love how he's represented because he's just like, yeah, I'm just this guy that's down here, you guys get to be up here and party all the time, and I have to go deal with the dead. Like, I love that they made him comical, but at the same time, part of me kind of wants to sit down in a trance and be like, how do you feel about that? Did you enjoy it? Have you seen it? Have you watched it? Do you want to watch it?
I've seen Disney's Hercules, like a lot of people, and it's interesting. You're talking about the James Wood character. The Hades is voiced by James Wood, and he's blue, and he has like hair that's fire,
I love his hair that's fire.
and he occasionally throws in like a Yiddish word when he's speaking. It's a comical character. And it's interesting because Hades is still very much part of pop culture, right? Like that's not
Oh,
the only
absolutely.
place he has appeared. I mean, there's Hadestown the musical, which has won tons of Tony Awards. There's the Hades and Persephone comic Lore Olympus, which is hugely popular. And then like don't even get me started on romance writers. Like Hades and Persephone is romance writers love to write about them. So, he's still part of the pop culture, but I would consider all of those kind of fan fiction portrayals of Hades. And in fan fiction, people kind of, do their own take, their own little imaginative take. And I think, all those are, I enjoy a lot of those things myself. So, I don't pass judgment on those who do enjoy them. I think that's great. But I think it's also just important to remember that what you see in fan fiction or pop culture is it may or may not actually be related to Hades, who Hades is himself, the actual Hades. So,
Right. Like, Hades does not want to overthrow Mount Olympus and all that stuff and release the Titans.
No,
No,
no.
he's not going to do that. He actually does care about his family. He just doesn't like to go up to Olympus very often, but he does care about them. And it would be willing to help them in a pinch kind of thing. That's kind
Yeah,
of
I
who
mean,
he
I
is.
get the feeling that Hades is it's kind of twofold. He's very busy, like his realm keeps him very busy, and also he's kind of like he's like, I really just I'll help if necessary, but a lot of it's nonsense, and I'd really just rather not be involved.
He's the very serious one in comparison to a lot of them, where, like Zeus, we all know of Zeus's exploits and the things that Zeus has done. And whereas, you have the opposite of Hades over here, who's just kind of like, I'm gonna do my thing over here. You do you, boo. I'm gonna be over here. I'm just gonna be over here with my wife chilling, okay? I'm not involved. That is your family drama, not mine. I love it though.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think also just hanging out like with the dead for so long, I think it sort of would shift your perspective somewhat.
Oh, yeah,
like
absolutely.
Like, you know, Olympus would start to feel more and more like a soap opera at some point.
Definitely.
Versus kind of being the host of that's, you know, taking care of, you know, mortal souls between lifetimes. And in fact, in ancient Greek philosophy and religion, you know, the Greeks believed in the transmigration of the soul. So you are, you know, you're born and you die. It's a cycle. Mm-hmm. And it was actually the default state of humanity to be dead. Like being alive was the exception. So you would be spending far more time in the underworld than you would being alive. So that's a significant responsibility to be the head administrator of that place. So, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. That I didn't realize that that was kind of the main kind of focus of how they viewed humanity, that, you know, you spent more time dead than you did alive. That's really interesting. Huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like that. I mean, That's cool, though. That's a cool take
life
on it.
Life was fleeting and very precious. So people really, you know, really respected being alive and really like tried to, you know, embody the vitality and the appreciation that they had for being alive. But it was the exception rather than the rule.
I love that so much. That's so cool, though. And obviously, you kind of see that throughout some of like the mythologies about, you know, what the humans and the heroes and all that did. And obviously, the heroes were also the exception as well, because not everybody could strive to heroship and all that. Plus, you know, if you think about back to that time period, lives were a lot shorter than they are now. So they were very fleeting in comparison. So I think that that's a really interesting way to kind of look at how that kind of came into being. So kind of bringing it back to the book, obviously you said that you could write like a whole several volumes of this. Is there going to be a continuation of Hades?
That's actually a question I get asked a lot, and which I think is great. I love it. I think it means people are resonating with the work, which is very exciting, and it makes me feel very happy. Yes, I do intend. I have a couple projects that I would really like to do. Probably the very next book I'm going to write is going to be a book on death priestessing, and I usually spell the word priest with an X on the end to make it a little bit more non-binary, like gender, non-binary or gender neutral. So that's what I'm saying, death priestessing, which is basically kind of the role of those of us who kind of stand in that threshold of transition, right? And that can take a lot of different forms. It's not necessarily always someone that's holding vigil with animals or humans that are dying, although it can take that form. There's all kinds of things going on. Like basically, there are numerous plants and animals that have to die to feed us all the time. So there's like sacred butchery, sacred cooking, things like that. There's the role of the psychopomp. There's those who do necromantic divination and help the living communicate with the dead. Then those are just a few. Like there's many, many ways that caretaking takes place, but it does, you know, it is a unique skill set to be able to navigate that in-between space and navigate it in a healthy way. But I think it's a role that's really needed in our society, especially in our Western society. We're very death avoidant.
Yes.
And we spend a lot of time trying to not think or talk about death-related issues. So that's actually a book I've been asked to write next by my publisher. So I'm excited to write that. And I'd also like to, I feel like Hades itself has a lot of depth, the book that it was just released, especially about building a relationship with Hades. But I feel like I also want to do an additional book that would be more like a sort of like an even deeper dive that is more of an intermediate to advanced piece that's almost like an underworld, like grimoire or like Book of Shadows, like how to go deeper with the magic of the underworld. So I'm looking forward to doing that as well.
10 out of 10, yes, absolutely, take my money right now. I love the death priestex book, especially because I am a death priestess. So I absolutely understand what you're saying. And especially that there are so many different roles when it comes to death, especially, you know, living in the Western culture, we don't like to talk about death. We try to actually avoid it at all possible costs. And death is very quickly forgotten in a lot of ways because it's too much for us to handle and because we're not taught properly how to do that.
We're not really given coping mechanisms or strategies around it. And when it does occur, the grieving process, like our bodies can't really cope with the pace of change that we're asked to accommodate, you know, because if you're a person who's working like a corporate type job or something like that, you may have like, if it's someone very important, like a spouse or a parent, you may get a week off of work. That's just not your body is just not able to cope with that. We force ourselves to cope with it. And I think it just adds to sort of our collective avoidance and just general sense of discomfort surrounding death. So, we're not given a lot of skills. And so I think death priestesses can really help with that. Like those of us who are skilled and who are, you know, comfortable in working with those types of energies, we can help others. And this is especially important right now. I mean, we have ongoing pandemics. We have several regional wars around the world. We have major cultural shifts occurring. We have climate chaos. We have all kinds of things that are happening that are giant existential transitions. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's also one of the reasons why Hades, who for, you know, millennia is been relatively unseen, has chosen to reveal more about himself at this point in time.
I would agree with that statement. And I would say also as a, you know, somebody who works within the realms of death, that it's not so much that it should be feared per se. I know that a lot of new witches out there are like, oh, wow, you work with death. That's really scary. In the beginning, yeah, it can be, because, again, we're not taught how to deal with it. But working with deities like Anubis, Hades, the Morrigan, even deities as far as Loki, and which a lot of people are like, oh, Loki's doesn't work as it did. You'd be surprised. He actually does. he does do some interesting work with that. And going as far as like Hermes and Horus and all these other deities that would, you know, work within that. And of course, the list just goes on and on and on. Right, but once you get into that and you're seeing all these different deities coming forward and really kind of making their presence well known, and especially now, it's like, oh, okay, we have to start transitioning people to be more comfortable with this. And it's really a fascinating thing to be a part of, to see that, yes, death is an everyday part of our world. But I loved in your book how you kind of talked about how there's a movement that's been happening for a little bit of how we need to be more accepting and understanding of how death works and the grieving process works, and allowing ourselves to work through that instead of basically giving ourselves more trauma by trying to just suppress it.
Yeah, I feel like comfort should be the eventual goal, and maybe the short-term goal is maybe just less harm and trauma.
Mm-hmm. Yes, less harm and trauma.
Like, less harm and trauma, and then ultimately comfort would be great, but we'll take baby steps, right?
Baby steps, as one of my coven sister says, baby steps to the elevator.
Yeah, totally.
It's a really great kind of concept to do that. And I think that it's also really important for us to start, you know, as we're seeing these deities come forward, especially like Hades, understanding that death is not as scary as we think it should be. And really kind of starting to look at it and go, yeah, it's a terrible thing. We don't want anybody to die. We don't want anybody to die even in a, you know, natural way. We would love to have our loved ones be with us forever. But that's not the reality of the human experience. And so understanding that is such a really great concept for us to kind of start to move forward into, I think, a new generation of acceptance and understanding of humanity.
And I also think, you know, it's good to recognize that it's natural to be afraid of death, to be afraid of something we don't understand, to be afraid of something that's a big shift, and to want to avoid that, or to want to try to change it if at all possible. And, you know, those feelings are completely valid. And you should definitely feel those feelings if you have them. And then, you know, see what's next once you kind of work through that. What's on the other side of that? Like, maybe just have a little curiosity about it.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that statement very much. So that kind of being said, so you have these two great projects in there. You also have I believe you said an anthology project, something about the divine feminine.
Yeah, so
let's talk about that a little bit.
I've been cool. Yeah. So I've been a writer my entire life. It's been a big part of my previous career. Now I'm a full-time writer and teacher. And I've done a lot of anthology projects over the years. One cool one that I really want to put some emphasis on, because this is a great project, and if you haven't heard of it, it's called The Feminine Macabre, and it's a journal of a woman's journal of all things paranormal. And it's for women who are writers who identify as women or non-binary gender diverse people contribute to this journal. And I believe it is in volume 5 or 6 now, but it's curated by a woman named Amanda Woomer. And it is a fantastic production. And I have a piece in the journal as well. So if you've never heard of The Feminine Macabre, go check that out. I would love it's a really cool project. So I just want to give Amanda a shout out there. And also she was an early reviewer of Hades, and I really appreciate her doing that for me. So that's the anthology that I want to mention. So yeah, my other projects. Yeah, it's really cool. So if you're into like the spooky or the paranormal, like check it out. So, and it's kind of a good combo of a lot of different things. Like there's things about tarot, there's things about hauntings, there's like history of like women who are paranormal investigators. I contributed an article on scrying, like how to scry in a mirror or in a fire or into water. So there's all kinds of things. It's a diverse spectrum of material that goes into that. And really the other project that I'm working on right now, besides writing, is The Way of the Weaver, which is my teaching collaboration with my mm-hmm. friend Murphy. And we don't have any writing projects on the table right now, but we do have a podcast. So check it out if you want to hear me and my friend Murphy talk about magic. And then once a month, we also release a tarot episode. We did like a 12-month tarot spread for the beginning of the year back in January. And so every month we check in and see like what we think of the cards that we drew world events. Yeah. Like world events and events in our personal lives and astrological events and how we feel like it worked out and if it matched up or if it didn't match up. So we're having fun doing that.
That sounds so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah. We actually just wrapped up a course on death priestessing. Murphy and I teach like a 3-month course about it. And that just wrapped up at the beginning of the month. So the next thing we have coming up, if this is something that you're interested in, is we have summer camp for witches. We have a witchy summer camp in Vermont. Yeah, it's on the side of a mountain in Vermont. And it's basically 4 days of witchy fun and rituals and learning sessions and just cool community and swimming in swimming holes and just like a really good time to connect with each other and with the land. And Way of the Weaver is a queer-centric program, so we're very, very inclusive. And check us out if you're looking for a space where everyone's welcome and we're not based in a specific tradition. We approach magic as sort of an open source skill set. So there's also that piece too.
That is so cool. And I honestly will make sure that there are links to everything in the show description. So that way, everybody, if you're interested in that, you can definitely check that out. It's funny, when you were talking about The Feminine Macabre, I had to go look it up and I was like, I know that. Why does this sound really familiar? Because I used to be basically TikTok friends. Or not TikTok, Twitter friends, back in the day when Twitter was still a thing. And now it's the weird thing that it is now. Yeah. I used to be Twitter friends with the creator.
With Amanda?
Yeah, with Amanda. And I was like, why does that sound so familiar? It's been years since we've spoken. But like, I was like, wow, that sounds really familiar. Why do I know this? Why do I know this? And then, you know, as I'm reading over some of these names, I'm like, yeah, this was all of my chaos and shadow days of all these people that I talked to on my previous podcast. So I was like, oh, I know all of these people. Okay, this is why I know this.
Yeah, see? Yeah, you should check it out and submit a piece the next time she has an open call. So yeah, it's a great project. I think the volume that just came out, and it came out around the spring equinox this year, I think it features a foreword by Mara Starling, who wrote the books on Welsh witchcraft and Welsh fairies and is a lovely person with a very fun TikTok, if you've never checked it out.
I love Mara. She's gorgeous and amazing and perfect in all the ways.
So it's a fun project.
Yes, it is such a great experience to kind of look at all these different stories. And there's so many amazing names, by the way. Like, I can't even begin to rattle off all the names that are on there. All of the volumes are available on Amazon because that's where I'm looking at them right now as we're speaking. But yes, the most recent one is with the foreword by Mara Starling, who wrote the book Welsh Witchcraft, and I believe also has a brand new book coming out, also in terms of Welsh.
It's Welsh fairies, yeah.
Welsh fairies. I was like, is it folklore? No, I couldn't remember the title off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But yes, Mara has a new book that's also coming out. That's really great. It's on my to read list. So, yeah, really great stuff. Definitely check those out, especially if you enjoy the strange and unusual stories, because that's what it's got in there. It's got theories on witchcraft, hauntings, folklore, dark history, tarot, cryptids, and more. So make sure you check all that really great stuff out, because there's just so many volumes and so many great names. Obviously, Jamie is one of them. So make
Yeah.
sure you check that out.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. Yeah, so that's kind of what's going on right now. So, lots more about Hades to come, lots more about Death Priest Ixing to come, and I think the other thing, well, I have two events coming up this summer.
Okay,
I'm
that
going
was
to
going to be
be
my next
at Mystic.
question.
Oh, okay, good. I'm going to be at Mystic South, which is a big pagan magical metaphysical conference that's held in Atlanta, Georgia, that happens in late July. I'll be giving a workshop about Hades, in which we do a trance journey to the underworld. And I'm also partnering with another oracular priestess friend of mine. And we're doing an oracular ritual where she is going to be channeling Hecate and I will be channeling Hades. So if you'd like to meet Hades
Ooh.
in person, come to Mystic South. That would be really fun. And then I just found out last night, which I'm really excited about this. I am going to be on site at Dragon Con in Atlanta, Georgia, as a professional expert in the occult.
Wow, that is awesome.
So I'm going to be a professional weirdo at Dragon Con, and I'm very excited about that. And that's a huge event. It always takes place over Labor Day weekend. So that's what I know for sure is coming up.
Yes, Dragon Con is a massively huge event, and it encompasses everything from fandoms to authors to anything you could possibly think of. Dragon Con's going to have it. You're going to also have some really great people who cosplay, especially if you
Oh
are
yeah.
a follower of mine on TikTok. You know that I do cosplay as well. So,
Oh, you do.
yeah, I
Oh,
do.
yay. Will you be at Dragon Con?
Now, unfortunately, my immune system doesn't allow me to interact with the public very well. So, yeah, I would love to, but it's one of those things of risk getting very, very ill or socialize.
Ah,
So, I
I
do
see.
everything
Well,
online.
I will have to give you field reports
Okay,
from
I will
Dragon
definitely ex expect that, and I will also be like, hey, you should
Con.
check out this list of like 200 cosplayers that I know, and be like, hey, go tell them that
Okay, I'll
Pagan
look for them. It'll be like cosplay bingo.
said hi. Yes. Well, I mean, honestly, they'll probably be hard to tell apart because most of them are Call of Duty
Oh.
cosplayers,
That's fine. I mean, I'm up for adventures. I'm looking forward to it. I've never actually attended the entire con itself, but I lived in Atlanta for a number of years. And when Dragon Con invades town, it's pretty hard to avoid.
Oh yeah,
And
absolutely.
there are a lot of things that you can go to that you're free and you don't actually have to be part of the con to go. And like one of them is the big parade that they have in downtown Atlanta, which is just fabulous. So it's an
Yes.
event that I have hovered around for many years and I'm very excited to attend.
I'm excited for you. That is so awesome. I think you're probably the first guest that's come on my show that's been like, yeah, I'm going to Dragon Con as a professional weirdo. And I'm like, holy crap, that's cool. So I'm so excited
Yep,
for you.
yep. Yeah, my wonderful husband, I was telling him when I got the email last night, we were in the kitchen talking and I'm like, "Ah, I'm a professional expert." And he's like, "A professional expert in what?" I'm like, "Well, I guess it's the occult probably, but professional weirdo." Just get with professional weirdo. Yeah.
I love that so much. That's so cool. So where can people find you on social media and connect with you?
Okay, so my website is jamiewagoner.com. There's info there on how to buy the publications that I have. You can listen to episodes of the Way of the Weaver podcast that I mentioned. Also, if you sign up for my newsletter, you'll always get like all my events and any other little things that I pass along, because sometimes I pass along little goodies, like little spells and rituals and things. And I don't send newsletters that often. It's about once a month. So join me there if you want to keep up with what I'm doing. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube, and all of those are at JM Wagoner.
Okay. I will make sure that all that's included in the show description. Obviously, the book link is going to be there, and I will also try to link at least one of the Feminine Macabres, because I believe there's six of them out now. There's a lot. I highly suggest that if you're interested in them, go just Google it. You'll find it. I promise.
Yeah.
There's so much great stuff. And I'm so excited for your events too. Like, that is so cool.
Yeah, I'm excited to bring Hades in person to Mystic South. So that's going to be a really powerful ritual.
Which, if you don't mind me asking, and you don't have to say this on air if you don't want to, that's totally fine. Who's the other oracular witch that you're working with?
So it's Amanda. It's Amanda Haker.
Okay.
Yeah, Amanda is, I don't know that you would call Amanda from any publications. Amanda does write, but she writes fiction. You might, who are in the SCA might know Amanda. Amanda is very active in the Society for the Creative Anachronism. But I actually met Amanda at Mystic South and just got into a really, deep conversation with her about our oracular work and about channeling and kind of the different sort of, it was like a techie talk about witchy stuff.
Love it.
And we just kind of came up with this idea because she is a devotee of Hecate, and you know, I, of course, am dedicated to Hades. And we were like, we should just do like an underworld ritual together. And so it just kind of came about, and the organizers are down for it. So we're going to be doing it this July.
That is so cool. Wow, that is really cool. I do not know the name, but that is okay. If you're going to be at Mystic South, please make sure that you check that out. And if you are a follower of the show, check it out and then shoot me like an email and be like, hey, this was awesome. Just tell me about it, because I'm going to live vicariously through my fans. That's how that's going to work.
That'd be great. Yeah, I would love to hear people's experiences of it. Because when I'm channeling Hades, like I'm not really that present. So I don't I'm not always able to remember or recall everything that happens. So it's very interesting when people tell me their impressions afterward. I always enjoy that.
It's a really fun experience. And maybe you should come back on the show so we can talk about channeling. That would be cool.
Let's do it. I would love that.
We totally should, because as somebody who's also a trans channeler, there's a whole lot of different levels of channeling that a lot of people I don't think realize are, you know, there, because it's not... It's written in books, but it's not written in books, and there's not really like a how-to guide, and because it's just like, you just do it, and it's like, okay, but how? And so
it's on my to write list. It's near the bottom of the list right now, but it's something that I really, really enjoy doing. And it can be a very, it can be a very intense experience, but it's also a bit of a more adept magical skill.
Yes.
So, when I have written a couple more things about death in the underworld, I think I might be tackling a book about channeling next.
That would be super, super cool.
Yeah.
So, yes, we will do that. We'll plan it, and it'll be a thing. So everybody who's listening, look forward to that sometime in the future. Yeah. It might come out around Christmas, because my schedule is busy. So that's okay.
Yeah.
We're super busy, but we like being busy because that means that we have lots of cool stuff that's being brought to you guys. So that's a good thing.
Yay. And there are so many great authors coming out with new books right now. I am thrilled. I am thrilled for all of them, and I feel grateful and honored and humble to be among such good company.
I think my list to Llewellyn, my most recent one, you know, for like, you know, late summer, early fall, was like 15 to 18 books deep. So
yeah.
And I try to bring everybody on the show. So that's why I'm like,
Well, we certainly appreciate you doing that, because it really helps to get out the word about our books. And also, I really enjoy meeting new people through interviews and podcasts and things. So this is just fun and delightful for me. It's like a dream come true.
We get to live the dreams you're talking to people on the internet. It's so amazing. And it's, you know, growing up as a millennial, they're like, don't talk to people on the internet. They're, you know, gonna be axe murderers. And that's what I do for my job now, which is hilarious to me. But everybody who's listening, Jamie, obviously, thank you so much for being here. This has been amazing. We're gonna have to do it again. And I can't wait for your upcoming projects and to hear about everything. It's gonna be amazing. And I look forward to all the stuff you're doing in the future. But everyone who's listened, thank you also for being here because you guys make the show possible by listening to it. You guys are all amazing. You know, if you're new to the show, make sure you're subscribed. Make sure that you're following along and you keep up with all the updates and everything that's going on. And if you are interested in the fiction side of the podcast, I also have a fiction show that is Pagan's Reading Nook. You can check that out on my website, which is Witchy Corner Productions. All the stuff is in the show description. I never leave you guys without links. You will always be easy to find, but make sure you're taking care of yourselves. Be kind to each other, and I will see you all next time. So bye, everyone.